So I said, I thought about it. I'm not sure that I completely told the truth, but I just didn't want to go into it. I mean, I'd been restless. I did sleep, but I'd also been restless the night before, concerned about getting up early. And so I did sleep well. I can't remember exactly what I thought, was something like pretty well. So then Baba said, what are your plans? Who cares about my plans? What are my plans? I'm going back to America. You know that. So I said, well, going to Bombay, then I'm going to Bangalore, then I'm going up to Delhi, and I'm leaving, and I'm going back to America, and I'm going back to school. Baba said, good, that makes me happy. And I told him that I had the 3 o'clock train out of there. And to summarize and to put into a capsule with one gesture that I will never forget, Baba said, don't miss your train. And, I mean, on the surface, as I say, that had to do with meeting a train in India at 3 o'clock on that particular afternoon in Pune. On another level, it had to do with the fact that what was really going on inside me is I thought, America's a drag. I'd just soon stay here, make friends with Mani and Eric. I mean, I may never get to see Baba again, but the Mandalay will do. They're great. and I got nothing going on in the States, that's for sure. So I may as well hang around here. Or if they won't let me hang around with them, I can get a house across the street or something, you know. because this is the best thing I've ever found. Baba was cutting into that. But also, Baba was, you know, cutting deeper and deeper. I can remember that as a kid, I used to have a dislike for not being on time. And I used to get all this crap from people about, you know, why was I uptight? That was the thing. Why was I so rigid about that? Why was I uptight about time? You know, and there was Baba just showing, you know, from the divine perspective where all that was, you know, it's spiritually a good thing to be on time. And there was no doubt about that. It was in the letters and it was in that gesture. And that was that. And, you know, I'm planning to be a lawyer, and, you know, lawyers lead very busy schedules, and they have to calculate the time which they charge to each client very precisely. And Baba, with that gesture, was also getting down to that, you know, it's a real spiritual discipline to do that honestly. Exactly how much time did you spend with a client? Not, was it 15 minutes, but was it 10 minutes or 9 or what? And also keeping your appointments and that type of thing. I mean, there's just so many levels of that little gesture in my life as far as its meaning and its spiritual goal, spiritual ideal. So Baba said, now when you get back to the States, write me one letter. Then, I can't remember the chronology exactly. I think it was something like Baba asked me to stand up. And you can see nothing really earth-shaking as far as I was concerned intellectually happened. But of course, that was another lesson that I learned, that Baba doesn't go for the head. Like Margaret Kass told me that when she met Baba, Baba said, stop reading, you know, because Margaret said that, I mean, her head was hopeless. At that point, because she'd been reading and thinking so much, she said there was room in her heart for Baba. But her head was worthless as far as the initial stages of discipleship were concerned. And that's exactly the technique that Baba was using on me. The mind was focused on other people, on light things, on day-to-day things, on practical things. Whereas what was really going on in the inner levels was Baba's consciousness, his love, his radiance, his beauty. And I, of course, had the idea that Baba was going to come at me in my own image, that is, through the intellect. But Baba came at me in my own image, it wouldn't be Baba. So Baba had me stand up, and he introduced me to Jal, and he said, Jal, I want Jal to show you around Pune, and so on and so forth. And Baba said, it's going to be very funny. Baba said, you have nice height. Nice height. Now, I mean, that seems like, at first it kind of struck me like, you know, if you meet your mother's next door neighbor or something. So, Mrs. McGrew, your boy. He's not a tall boy, nice. it kind of struck me like that. But, I mean, on other levels, when I look back at my youth and things, habit patterns that get built in, I was always the youngest in my class, and I was always the shortest. And consequently, I saw myself psychologically as younger and shorter and therefore inferior to a lot of people. Baba reversing that as an ego pattern, as entrenched in me, I said, have a nice life. I mean, you ought to reassess yourself, my boy. I mean, you're not the short little runt you used to be. But it was also, on another level, it was a kind, graceful, courteous thing to do, which is, of course, Baba. Then he said, it's going to be very funny, this short Indian, this tall American, wandering around the streets. The people are going to be amused by that. Whereupon Francis said, well, Baba, it'll be the long and the short of it. Schmaltz corn going on in the back of the room. Baba saying something like, well, Jal's growth is stunted. And just the whole thing would overwhelm me. I mean, schmaltz, corn, quasi-sarcasm or something going on. And it seemed to me, well, Baba's God. He made Jal who he was. And so it was really Baba's fault that Jal's growth is stunted. But, I mean, also other things were going on. I mean, to say what happened intellectually, to recount the events, is really only to touch the surface. I mean, I realize I'm saying that over and over, but it's very true. I mean, for me, one of the things I had always been known as was an extremely sarcastic person. In fact, one girl signed in my high school annual to the boy with a mind like nitric acid. You get a little bit of a feel for how some people saw me. The minute you get into reading spiritual things and mystical things, you realize that that's not a very nice way to be. What Baba was showing me is, like, when Baba did that, I mean, there was just incredible love going around the room. On one level, it was like, well, welcome to the family. We all know each other. We love each other. So we make jokes about each other. Jal knows I love him, and Jal loves me. And so we're free because we love each other. We can crack jokes at each other. There's nothing wrong with that. It's part of love. And it made me feel that, you know, it isn't what comes out of your mouth in terms of just the statement that some statements are spiritual and some are not and some are sarcastic and some are loving, but it really is the way in which you do it. I mean, Baba did it with so much love that he could have said, Jal, you're a baboon, you're a dunce, you're an idiot, you remind me of a mole. Jal would have loved it because, I mean, there was just so much love pouring out of Baba that what was coming out of Baba's mouth, or what was coming out of Eric's mouth, or going on in Baba's mind, didn't matter because it was so clear that it was done with love. And so that's what Baba was showing me, that, you know, if you do with love, if you relate to people with love, and they know it, then you can make jokes, you can be in your old way, but you just have, the first thing, the important thing, is to be loving. All of these things, a lot of these things I say are editorializing, are things that dawned on me in blazes of inspiration years later. I mean, I just didn't walk out and write this down on my notepad and say, oh, yeah, I learned a lot there. Because I kind of sort of came out of there just sort of zap, you know, with a love. I mean, that's what I came out of there. I mean, my mind had stopped and so on. Baba, in fact, asked me, said, do you have any questions? And nothing. Nothing was between my ears. I mean, it was just, all my life, there had been so much going on between my ears that I was dying to shut it up. And nothing. Baba says, do you have any questions? No, nothing. Incredible. So then the interview was almost to a close, and I was kind of feeling unconscious. Well, I'm going to go back, and all my friends are going to say, well, I met Baba. I mean, fantastic. What did he say? And Baba said, well, how's Robert? How's Richard Alpert? Reed stay with God? Stuff like that. And they'll say, wow, powerful. I feel like an idiot. You know? So then the mood changed, right? And Baba started acting another day. He wasn't going to give me the meaning of life in 5 minutes. He was going to do it in about 20 seconds. Baba said, what you are looking for is God. Well, stop right there. I'd never in my earthly days been looking for God. I was brought up a Presbyterian. At a certain point I thought it was ridiculous. And in my early college days, I was an atheist. I thought if there was a God, he was a bad guy because look at the world he made, which I didn't like very much. But I was pretty convinced that he didn't exist. And when I began my mystical trek, it wasn't to find God. It was just to be happy. That's all. I mean, I wanted some way to be happy. So, I mean, that, you know, we read Baba, and he says that all the time. The goal of life is to become one with God. But, I mean, I had never conceived of myself as going for God. I was just trying to, you know, climb out of a rut. So that was stunning. And then Baba said, and God is not this physical body. God is inside you. Which just reversed a whole bunch of things going on in me, because, I mean, Baba was the most real, the most powerful, the most wonderful thing I had ever found, and I wanted to hang on to it. I didn't want to go back there to America and all that stuff again, because that Henry Miller has this beautiful description of when he got on the boat to go to Paris, you know, when he first decided that's it, he couldn't work at the Western Union Telegraph office anymore. And he says, you know, goodbye Buffalo Bill, goodbye President Lincoln statue, goodbye Jefferson Memorial, and goodbye street of my early sorrows. And that's pretty much how I felt about leaving America. You know, it was goodbye street of my early sorrows. And, you know, the fact that I was going to have to go back there and all that. But, you know, in Baba's love, it seemed possible. And also, as Baba said that, I just knew that it was not my destiny to be with Baba in the physical body. I mean, that Baba said, then God is not this physical body. God is inside you. Somehow I just knew that my thing was just to go out there and do it in the world, the thing I didn't want to do or thought I couldn't do. And I can't explain how I knew that, but a lot of things happen in Baba's consciousness, and a lot of things wake up that we really don't realize are there, which can wake up in Baba's consciousness. And that's also interesting. I mean, Baba's just so uncanny in bringing so many powerful psychological forces together, because when I got on the plane, this girl who I knew in the States put a letter in my pocket, which I opened on the plane, and said, it's very strange that you go 8,000 miles to find something that's really inside you all the time. And that's in a way what Baba was saying. Then Baba said, because, you know, telling that God is inside you to a kid like me, what Baba surely knew was probably one of the world's greatest temptations, to go off to a hermitage or lead a reclusive life and, you know, just forget about the world and other people. I mean, the yoga trip or the ascetic trip. So Baba said, you must also remember that God is in everyone and everything. And they're kind of tying up the whole thing. So, you know, God is in Richard Alpert, and I love him. I'm God, and I love him. God is in Robert Dreyfus, and I'm God, and I love him. And God is in Diana, and I'm God, and I love her. And God is in your schedule, your train, and in going back to school. And, you know, making it ever so clear that, you know, that's right, God is in you and in your heart, but, you know, God is in everything and everyone. You know, love and service, which I've given you an example of, and I now want you to focus on. Love and service are the things for you. And in the interim, there's something I neglected to describe. Baba asked me, did I have any questions? And I said no, but I had written this little poem to Baba. So I pulled it out of my pocket, and I was going to give it to Baba, assuming, well, Baba would read it before I went to bed or something. No, Baba's going to read it out. Another just lesson about Baba, I mean, he doesn't waste time. I mean, if there's an opportunity to be human and do it now. Baba's not going to go home and tuck it in his scrapbook and take it out 2 days from now. I mean, Baba moves at this incredible pace. Got it? Read it. You know? Well, read it. And it went along. Well, as I can remember, it was something like, ignorance of you is despair, knowledge of you is hope, love of you is happiness, service to you is nobility, obedience to you is bliss. I've got it written down somewhere, but that's close to what it was. And Baba's, oh, I like the last line, and Francis cheered that one. So I can just tell you, Baba likes obedience, no doubt about that. Baba, the final thing that Baba said to me, he said, if you are true to the last line of your poem, you will one day see me as I really am. I had never, in all my born days, ever thought of being able to see God as he really was. I mean, I wasn't even in the ballgame. I mean, I thought that was just beyond me. And I wasn't even striving for that. But, you know, there he was saying, focusing my attention on the goal. As if, you know, I just went in there with so many misunderstandings of who he was and what the goal was. And in those short 5 minutes or 10 minutes or however long it was, Mala just sort of gave me an example and helped me to refocus all sorts of things and to know. And I would say that one of the things I got out of that is somehow there was just a built-in knowledge because of Baba's consciousness that whatever crap that I may have to go through, and I can assure you that that period of the honeymoon that I talk about not worrying, about feeling full of love and light and everything that led up to the interview and lasted for a while after the interview, that stopped. And it was a horrible feeling to wake up one day and the love was no longer there and the light was no longer there and the happiness was no longer there. And I was going to have to face my hang-ups and overcome them and try hard and live in the world and all this stuff. But somehow Baba had done something, I mean, for whatever that I may have gone through since then, I did know one thing, that the end of the road, which is him, is something phenomenally beautiful. And Baba awakened something in me that knew that, that knew that there's a line in God Speaks that says, the God realization is worth, you know, all the suffering. It's worth far more than any suffering you ever may have to go through in all your lifetimes. And which, from my perspective, I mean, I couldn't believe that. I simply intellectually could not accept that, I mean, if I look back on it. Because it seems to me there is so much suffering in the world. People, babies getting bombed in Vietnam, and that, you know, we could sit here for years and name all the suffering in the world. And this seemed to me, you know, there are characters in Dostoevsky who say they will not forgive God for so much as a tear shed by a little girl who is in pain, you know. And there's a side of me that feels like that. But Baba helped me to feel that, you know, that's what he says is really true, because there's something in me that almost was awake and almost yearn for all those horrible things that I never wanted to happen to me, you know, like starving to death and being blind and crippled and maimed and suffering terribly and all the things that one could think about that he wouldn't want to have happen. So I knew that. But I also knew, because Baba showed me an incredible amount of his suffering, that suffering was part of life. It's hard for me to accept. I don't like suffering. I mean, I feel deeply for those who do suffer, and I've never been able to reconcile myself to a life in a world where so many people suffer so much. It seems unfair. But I saw that Baba suffered. So it must be part of the game, because Baba voluntarily undertakes that suffering to relieve some of ours. But I saw that there is victory in the midst of that suffering, because as broken as his body was, and I can assure you, it was frail to touch. It seemed like he hadn't eaten in 3 months, and his face was pale, and the body was broken. The body was exhausted, no question about it. It was not the dynamic, handsome body that you see of the 30s, with Baba striding up the hill with a mandali yearning to catch after him and running as fast as they can. It was the body of an old, exhausted, frail human being. And yet, out of that came a consciousness so magnificent that it's overwhelming. I don't have any words for it. Because, you know, that's it. There is suffering, but God is not the body. There is suffering in the body, but God is not the body. And that's, Baba was that. Baba showed me that, and Baba helped me to experience some of that. And in some ways, resolve my own questions about suffering. So that was it. I mean, Baba doesn't waste any time. Baba embraced me, and that was it. That was the last I saw of Baba. And Jal took me around, and among things he said were, well, you know, you have to be in the world, but not of it. Now, you might meet some people might come up to me and say that, and I'd met a few, and I said, oh, come on, it's easy to say, but I've never met anybody who does it. But I felt that Jal didn't. I felt, I mean, he was just stating a fact that he was in the world, but not of it. Didn't matter to him. Another thing that Jal said is, you know, a lot of people meditate on Baba, for hours and hours, and showed me where they did it. So, but as soon as they stop meditating on Bala and go out there in the street in their daily lives, they forget about Bala. And I thought, oh, that'll never happen to me. I felt so charged up with Bala's love and everything that it'll never happen to me. Well, of course it did. And, you know, Dahl was just stating a fact, which is a tough one to face, that over and over and over, I, in my daily life, forget that touchstone which contains the meaning of my life, and which I've had some experience of. Why, I don't know. I think it has to do with, to make Bala part of every moment, one has to want Bala intensely, and I don't want Bala intensely enough to make him part of every moment of my life. You're not going to turn it on?
Except on the other side, I understand.
Oh, okay. Well, if you've got it on the cassette, somebody...
How about some of that?
So I went back in my daily life, and, you know, I proceeded to make a lot of mistakes over the course of the next few years. I stubbed my toe, I fell on my face, I did things which I regret, which I won't tell you about. but I found it ain't easy. I was so bound and determined, you know, after that. It seemed there was it was so clear, so absolutely clear that there was nothing else in life to do, you know, but to surrender to Bala and to obey Bala. But just as Jal said, easy when you're right there, very easy. But when you get out in the world, it is very hard. You know, I'm saying, speaking for myself. And I still find it hard. But, you know, for some reason, I'm still in there crying, although... Admittedly, having done, you know, many things that I wish I hadn't, which had taught me things, and admittedly finding it very hard to get to a point where I felt even some fraction, some spark of that love that I felt in Bala's presence. I don't know, it's hard to say. I mean, I wouldn't even evaluate what has taken place in the 7 years past that. I've always known since I met Bala that Bala is God, and there is God, and so we should try our best to love him as well as we can. That's all I can say. And that Bala is not saying obedience as like the school teacher says obedience because if you're disobedient, you get a bad mark, and therefore you won't get a good job, that type of thing, and it's like socially disreputable to do that. Bala's just saying it as a fact, that I went in there trying to find something that'll make me happy. And that's Bala showed me that obeying him was it. If I really want to be happy, I'll just obey him. And that's it. I've got nothing more to add. Roger had a couple of questions for me, which I'll be glad to answer, and would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
I'll ask you after anybody else asks. They're so unrelated.
Okay.
I really interested in, like, after, leading a life in the world, you know, like having a career,
yeah.
Friends you have,
yeah.
How you relate to people who do not follow Baba, you know, how do you find any difficulties with reconciling, it seems that there could be a division between following Baba and being close with those who are pursuing other paths in life. Do you find you have to balance these things carefully? Do you know what I'm getting at?
Do I relate differently to people who do not follow Bala from the way I relate to people who do follow Bala? Or do I find it difficult to practice what Bala says in relation to people who do not follow Bala? Or is that not it at all?
Well, do you find that you have to... do you find you make any divisions between those who follow Baba and those who don't, and the way you
relate to people? Yeah. I don't know. Back heard the question, do I make divisions between people who follow Baba and people who do not follow Baba? Yeah. Unless I have an intuitive feeling about someone, as a rule, I never tell them about Baba. I mean, I meet all sorts of lawyers and fellow students and people, you know, in restaurants and, you know, everywhere I go in a daily life, cab drivers and people on the plane. And it would be a very, very rare situation that I would tell such a person about Baba, just because I feel somehow that isn't my style, and that isn't how I feel that I want to follow Baba. So, I mean, there is that division. I wouldn't say that it's mental, it's more intuitive. If I felt that a person really wanted to know about Baba and asked me, you know, are you interested in mysticism? Do you have a master? Could you suggest something? Well, I'd be happy to sit down and talk with them and share that with them. But I wouldn't go into my boss, who's thoroughly a man of the world, and say, hey, I follow Mayor Bali's an Indian spiritual master. I like it, you know. So there is that. But as far as relating to them, I try to feel, just as Baba said, I am in everyone and everything. And Baba was showing me that. I mean, as far as I know, my friend Diana is to this day not a Baba lover. I've never seen her around Baba activities, and probably she doesn't want to forget about me, you know, because she's probably married and has kids, and there was this kook she knew back when in India, and she'd just soon leave that in the past. Still, Baba was so generous and loving toward her. I mean, that for me was kind of an example. And Baba just saying, you know, I am in everyone and everything. I mean, I try to. Baba once told me, he said, remember me above all beings in the creation. And I try to remember Baba as much as possible and to remember that Baba is in every human being, so that in relating to every human being, if I can remember Baba, then I'm really relating to Baba in them. And therefore, I try to take them seriously and to listen to them and to love them and to help them. I'm not saying I can do this all the time, but I try when I'm at my best. And, you know, to help them, to be kind to them, smile at them, and that type of thing, which I hope I would be able to do to a Baba lover, too. So I would just, in my own life, I mean, I wouldn't talk about the things that I care most deeply about to a non-Baba person. That isn't my style, and I don't want to do that, and I'm not a proselytizer, and I don't feel that Baba wants me to do that. But as far as relating to people, I try to do basically the same thing, which is to remember that Baba's in them and to relate to them as if I'm relating to Baba in them, to help them and to love them and to be sensitive to them. So one of my worst, well, we won't speak of that. Yeah. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, I've got another one I didn't have.
Somebody had Mark.
Can you find that you have a deeper in contact with Baba now?
Yeah. After Baba dropped his body. Yeah, the question for people up front, do I find that I in my own life have a deeper inner contact with Baba since then? Yeah. The answer is definitely yes. I mean, I've never been able to, outside of say Darshan and meeting some of the older Baba lovers, being able to feel that overwhelming love that I felt in Baba's presence. I mean, I don't wake up in the morning and it's there, because I'd be somewhere else if I did. But in terms of my own day-to-day thing with Baba, I feel closer to Baba now and feel his love more than I did, say, in 66, 67, 68. I don't know why, but I do. Roger?
In your life, how does remembering Baba manifest? Do you say it in yourself? Or?
I just remember Baba's form. Darwin Shaw once said, you know, the form, Baba said, I'm not the body, but he said, the form of God is the threshold to God, because we, you know, how does one think of the impersonal God and all that? I mean, I can't, it doesn't mean anything to me, and even if I could come up with a concept, that I'd have such a cold feeling about it that would turn me off. So I remember Baba's physical form in its millions of ways that he's been so generous in giving it to us, in the pictures and the movies and all of this, and just try to remember that Baba's here, right here in this room, and in my life, and in my room, and my studies, and everybody. I think you had a question.
Yeah. Jim, you're active back there in the Boston group. Can you tell us a little about what goes on back there?
Roger's question was what goes on in Boston. Well, we have Saroj came to visit us when he was living a couple of years ago, and he suggested that we He said things were, as he put it, Boston Baba lovers he found timid and they needed structure. So he suggested that an information center would help. So a few months later, there we got together an information center in Boston, which we staff 6 days a week. It has Baba's pictures and carpet, and we have a tape library, various Baba lovers talking about Baba, and some full library of Baba's books and paintings of Baba, and so on and so forth. And it's open to the public. People can come and find out. So this gives Baba lovers a chance to serve Baba, you know, by taking care of the information center, selling the books and talking to the public and so on. Meetings go on two levels. The one level is a weekly meeting, which is chaired by anybody in the group who volunteers, but there's a one or two people who kind of takes care of that. So if a guy just comes in and says, hey, I found about Baba yesterday and I think I'd like to lead a meeting, probably he wouldn't get the chance. We'd suggest, you know, hang around a little bit and learn a little more before you take the step of leading a meeting. So there is some screening, but basically a kind of a person who's been with Baba for a while and has some things that he'd like to share or she would like to share. It might be music, it might be, say, I really love Hafiz and I'd like to share my love of Hafiz or Rumi with you. I'd like to read that. Or I'd like to talk about musts. I gave a talk on musts and the wayfarers and so on. And if, you know, people, young people, the group in Boston has no older Baba lovers. We're all people in the 20s and 30s, with the exception of a few people over that who are as new to Baba as the young people. And I'm sure all of you have the same feeling about other young people being too dominating as we do in Boston, which is, you know, we all feel that we're independent, critical people. We don't want some guy our age telling us where it's at. And so you can get up for 1 week and tell people where you feel it's at, but you know, it's just your feeling, you know. And you can, if somebody feels, look, this group is so dull and staid, we need music. Well, so let's sing those, you know, let's sing some Baba songs. Oh, they can do that. And if some people say, well, you people have no taste, we ought to have more poetry, let's put a little Hafiz and Rumi in there, they can do that. So there is an outlet for people who are dissatisfied, and of course there's the ultimate outlet. If they don't like us, they don't have to come. So that's meetings. And we have, you know, a few celebrities come. Darwin Shaw comes, and Barucha was there, and so on and so forth. We try to avoid the New York system, which is celebrities. I named it, I'll say it. But I mean, if you get the Baba League, Baba House newsletter, you realize that they operate on the celebrity system. I mean, they call them BCs, Baba Celebrities. And we prefer not to do that because we like to use local talent.
LT,
right. And the other level of activity is we play the Sufi tapes, which are put out from the Sufi Center once a week or twice a week. Last year it was more than that. Let's see. There are several big activities. There's something going on Amartiti. There's something going on in Baba's birthday. We had a 3-day affair last year with films on one night and a big kind of a circus almost one night and a biography and music on another night. So that's about it. Roger? I'm the clown. Oh, that's literal. When we had the Baba Fair, I dressed up in a clown suit and ran around with my little Clarabelle horn and stuff. I mean, you can only take being a lawyer so many hours of the week. Mark?
How do you feel?
How do I feel about premarital sex? Well, yeah. I see the same patterns. I see the same honeymoon types of things. I see people relating to Baba in the same terms. No, it's uncanny. It's the same thing. It's the same phenomenon. It's unbelievable. I see people who come to Baba now, never having met him, with more feeling for Baba. I go to Myrtle Beach and I meet people who are 13, 14, 15, 16, and they have deep feeling for Baba and real, I would almost say, sophistication about him at that age, which stuns me, because at 16, I mean, I couldn't even see straight. I just, it's amazing. It's amazing.
In Baba's discourse, he talks about the discourse about the need for a corporate master.
Yeah.
And the need for that master to be in the Baba. And a lot of people, when you come and ask about, since Baba's not in the body, can he be the corporate master that he's not putting his hands forward? What do you think?
Oh, well, I think Baba's made it clear. What? Yeah, the question is, Baba talks in the discourse about the need for a perfect master. Now that Baba's not in the body, can Baba function as a master? Or should we go out and find ourselves a perfect master? Isn't that basically it? Yeah. Well, I don't know if you got a copy of the letter that Kitty sent out. It's a letter from Erich to a girl in Chicago, where she apparently asked the question, and Erich talks about that, saying that, you know, Baba's love aura is going to be around the world. It's kind of like an envelope around the world. That love will be here for 200 years in Erich's view. And that Baba has just laid out the plans so that even if we got ourselves a perfect master, they'd only be going dancing to Baba's tune, so to speak. So that Baba's the master behind this. And because Baba has left his love here, and because Baba is unique as the avatar, is the only one being able to function as a master after he leaves the body, as opposed to every other kind of master, there's no need for that. Now, you're probably somewhat familiar with Mershita's views on whether or not you need a teacher, and she makes it very clear that she is the only authorized teacher as far as Baba's work and development is concerned, but, I mean, that's still oriented to Baba as a master. So I don't feel that we need a perfect master. You know, I feel about myself, I was born in the West to live a Western life, and none of the perfect masters are in the West anyway, and it's, I don't even, you know, for me it's not a realistic consideration. I feel, you know, very strongly Baba is a master, and he says he's a master. No doubt in Erich's mind. Yeah, Baba, through the correspondence, and in the meeting which I just described, I mean, like, read Stay With God, write me a letter, et cetera, all orders. I think that one can go through the discourses, and depending on how serious one wants to take those, one can find a lot of orders that apply to every individual in the group, if one wants to relate to Baba on that level of obedience. Because, I mean, I can, as a matter of personal experience, say that obedience makes Baba very happy.
Oh, yeah, right.
One of the interesting things of that exchange was I said, I hope that I will one day be big enough to be nothing. And Baba said, through Adi, one day you will be big enough to be nothing.
Thank you, Jim.